We need to have these difficult conversations and do it in a way where it is productive, where we can come out of these conversations and find common ground and move forward. We need to collaborate with all stakeholders, whoever it may be, so that we can pull together as a society.
Hello, and welcome to Dwayne Morris DEI 360 with Joe West. I am Yumika Anderson Howard, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Manager at the firm. On today's episode, we are honored to have American Bar Association President, Deborah Enix Ross, as she discusses her career journey and path to the ABA.
Hello, everyone. This is Joseph West. I'm a partner at Dwayne Morris and the firm's Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer. I also serve on our partners board, which is the governing body of the firm, and I'm honored today to be joined by Deborah Enix Ross, the president of the American Bar Association. Madam President, thank you for gracing us with your presence.
Sir, thank you so much for having this chance to just have a nice chat.
Well, I have been privileged to get to know you a little bit, but let's assume that not everyone within the sound of our voice right now has had that same privilege. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your career path, and tell us what's brought you to this point in leading the largest organization of lawyers in the world.
Well, I always start out by saying I'm just a girl from Harlem. I grew up in New York City. And I'm first generation everything, first generation in the family to graduate from high school and go to college and attend law school. So I start from that premise that I'm a New York City girl through and through, and more particularly from Harlem. And my journey to this point has been one that has had some ups and downs and some challenges, but I am so proud to be sitting here today as president of the American Bar Association. I am pinching myself every day thinking about what a great honor this is and a privilege and really how I got here. And it is because when I graduated from law school, one of the first things I did was take all of my graduation money and buy a plane ticket and go to an ABA meeting. I think it was in San Francisco more than 40 years ago. Wow. Because I wanted to be around what I thought were the best lawyers in the field of international law. And that's what drove me to make that decision. And it's probably the best thing that I've done for myself and for my career. To get me started.
So you've touched on two things there. One, your affiliation with the ABA, and the second is your career choice, the practice area you chose. Let's talk about the latter first. You know, people underappreciate the fact that the president of the ABA has a day job.
Yeah. Yes. So
tell us about your work, your practice area, and how you got to that point, and how you landed with your current organization.
So I am the senior advisor to the International Dispute Resolution Group at Debevoise and Plimpton in New York. I've been with the firm 20 years, and it was really a culmination of practicing in international arbitration and litigation. And I tell law students and young lawyers this all the time. It took me 7 years to get my first job in international law. Now, that doesn't mean for 7 years after graduating from law school, I sat around and did nothing. No, I started my career as a legal services lawyer. I'm really proud of that work. And that really for me was foundational. I learned how to be a litigator. I learned how to manage clients. I learned how to manage a practice. All of that in legal services, because it's kind of sink or swim, you get thrown into the deep end of the pool and you figure it all out. And along the way, I've had other jobs that culminated in me becoming the U.S. representative for the International Chamber of Commerce Court of Arbitration, the ICC, one of the premier arbitration institutions. I did that for 7 years and then went on to live in Geneva, Switzerland, working for the World Intellectual Property Organization and International Arbitration. So a steady, after that first 7 year breaking into international arbitration, I've had a steady career in international arbitration, culminating in my current position at Debevoise, where I am so pleased and so privileged to be amongst the smartest, best international dispute resolution practitioners in the world. So that's how I got to this point in my day job. And I'm really very fortunate that the firm supports all of our lawyers being involved in pro bono and professional kinds of activities that enhance your practice of law. And I think that's really important.
Well, you just really also hit upon something that I think is critically important for younger lawyers, and that is both having both the patience, but also the strategic thought process of building their career paths. I mean, so many people, I think, you know, our vintage, when we think back on what we imagined our career path to look like and what our career path actually ended up looking like, oftentimes there's no overlap at all.
Yes.
Sometimes you're just auditioning for what's next by what you're doing right now. Talk a little bit about the importance of that and how important that is for career growth.
Well, I often tell people you are responsible for your career. You need to manage your own career. And that means, and not everyone has the same career path. Right. We don't all have the same journey, and that's okay. As long as you feel that you are moving in the direction that you need to go, then you will do that at the pace that makes sense for you. Sometimes it's frustrating. You may want it to move faster. But I always feel, for me at least, in the end, I get to be where I need to be at the right time. And I gain skills along the way. So in each of the jobs that I've had, I feel they've built on one another. And that really, for me, is one of the great values of being a lawyer, right? That we know how to pivot, we know how to find we know how to research, we know how to find the materials, we know how to respond to our clients' needs. And I think it's really important that we always remain both flexible and curious in our career paths and in our practice. That to me is one of the elements that makes for a great lawyer, that you're able to have that kind of flexibility of thought while you have a core set of practices that you're also able to expand and to move with the times.
Yeah.
And to be in charge of your career.
Well, before we pivot, to use your term, to talking about the ABA, one more question about the career path and your current role. You know, those many years ago when I started trying cases, ABR was almost unheard of.
Yes.
I mean, if you couldn't settle a case, you tried the case. And, you know, it's just exploded in significance and importance since then. I think for a number of reasons. I think clients are a lot more risk averse these days than they used to be. And there's the perception that alternative dispute resolution is more cost effective. There's voices on either side of that, so I won't get into that. But here's what I will mention. Since ADR is so much more critically important now, particularly I think in an international setting, you know, one of the series we did talked about diverse neutrals and the lack thereof. And how there's just a gap in, you know, diversity among the ranks of neutrals who are diverse. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, you're obviously in that space and an even more, I think, exclusive space in the international dispute resolution space. Give us a sense for what the landscape for diverse neutrals looks like. and what you think should be done to improve that situation.
Yeah, so I just want to pick up on when you talked about what it looked like all those years ago when I began in international arbitration. There was almost like a mantra, which was real lawyers don't arbitrate, they litigate, right? There was this kind of almost like a macho feeling that you didn't want to resort to ADR. And you're right that we've seen a sea change there for a number of reasons. Why international arbitration in some quarters is preferred. But getting to your point about diversity in this profession, you know, when I began, as I said, my first job in international arbitration was I was the American representative for the ICC Court of Arbitration. There were no women on the list of arbitrators, because one of my jobs was to appoint arbitrators, American arbitrators in particular, for ICC cases. And when I went to look to see who was on the list, there were no women and there were no people of color.
Wow.
So I set out to change that in my own way. Lucy Reed, people who know international arbitration will know the name, but Lucy Reed was the first woman that I put on the list for the U.S. National Committee. And Ben Davis, who just received the CPR Award for his efforts in diversity, was an African-American male living in Paris who worked for the ICC. And so together, Ben and I started working and thinking about what we could do to enhance diversity. Now, we have come a long way since then. And I know that there's more effort that we need to do, but even within the ABA, when we had our resolution that called for the use of more diverse neutrals, it called for clients in particular to make requests that the lists of names that they receive be diverse lists, have diversity on there. That was an ABA resolution that was then picked up by the ABA Dispute Resolution Committee, mm-hmm. Section that is. And now that we've seen all kinds of efforts, whether it's arbitral women, whether it's CPR, whether it's the US Council, all of these institutions are now focused on efforts to make their lists of neutrals more diverse, to make opportunities for diverse lawyers. So I say first, let's pause and recognize how far we've come.
Right.
And then let's keep pushing forward.
Well, thank you for your efforts in that regard. You're a trailblazer in so many different ways. Let's talk about the ABA. I've been fortunate to get to know a number of former ABA presidents. And the thing that always strikes me is how extraordinarily demanding and time consuming the job is. Why on earth would anyone want that job?
Yeah, you ask yourself that, don't you? I will answer it for me. It was, if I join any organization, I'm going to get value out of that organization, and I'm also going to contribute. And I will contribute in the ways that hopefully my talents and skills will allow, and hopefully in a way that helps to improve any organization that I'm involved in, whether it's the ABA or the Board of Trustees of my church or being on the board of Union County College. But for the ABA in particular, I am focused this year on what I call the cornerstones of democracy.
Yes.
The three C's, that's civics, civility, and collaboration. And this has become for me almost a calling because I think that we are at an inflection point in our society where if we don't get civics education and civics engagement correct, then we are going to continue to see a decline in confidence in some of our democratic institutions and in fact, a decline in confidence in our judiciary and our judicial system. So having civics education, having civility to be able to have people have difficult conversations, whether it's about diversity, whether it is about political events, whatever the conversations may be, whether it's voting rights or policing or gun control, we need to be able to have these difficult conversations and do it in a way where it is productive, where we can come out of these conversations and find common ground and move forward. And then for me, collaboration means that although the rule of law, because that's really what we're talking about, although the rule of law certainly is the purview of lawyers, it is not our exclusive purview or responsibility. We need to collaborate with all stakeholders, whether it's business leaders or faith leaders, journalists, academics, whoever it may be, so that we can pull together as a society.
So as you were talking, I was thinking back to two instances when my respect for you was solidified.
Oh my.
The first was when you reached out to me not long after I became the chairman of the ABA's Council for the Section of Legal Education and Admissions to the Bar, which for people who don't know, it's the body that oversees law school accreditation and bar admissions. And you scheduled regular meetings with me and with the staff of the council. And I realized with other chairs of various sections, which first of all, I don't even know how you make time for that on top of the other duties that you have. But the other thing is that just the fact that you were willing to do that and that you were willing to learn what the council was doing, offer whatever support you could, meant a lot to me as the chairperson of that body, which I think is doing some critically important work. The other was at the ABA mid-year meeting recently in New Orleans when you addressed the body, the House of Delegates, and your remarks were, you know, not only absolutely brilliant, but I thought the fact that you identified some of the entities and various factions either within the ABA or within the legal ecosystem that haven't always seen eye to eye with a lot of what was happening within the ABA indicated that you had reached out to them, that you were willing and had in fact spoken with and collaborated and communicated with them, said a lot about you as a person, as a leader. And I just wanted you to know that, and I want people listening to understand how impactful that was to me observing it.
That is so kind. I really appreciate that. Look, my philosophy about leadership is that you find great people, you put them in place, and you let them do what they need to do, and you offer support where you can. And as I've said to you and others, even if what you need from me is to get out of your way, that's fine as well. But it's important to really empower people to be able to do the work that they're passionate about, because that's how you're going to get the best out of everyone. And that's how we're going to move forward as an organization. And I think, you know, frankly, as a society, it is really identifying those skills, those people that have that passion, and giving them the tools that they need to do it in a productive way.
Well, I'm going to respect your time and wrap up with a couple of questions that sort of fall along the lines of what you just mentioned. And that is this, as a profession, there have been so many changes, and you've talked about some of them. If you are a younger lawyer just entering the profession, what is it that should make you excited about being a member of this profession? That's number one. Number two, I mean, look, it's no secret to anybody listening to this. that, you know, the ABA has challenges that it is facing, that it has faced, and that it needs to address going forward. Those of us who have been involved with the ABA understand its value and appreciate its value. Not everyone does, particularly, you know, some of the younger lawyers who have so many other options available to them. So it's a twofold question. Where do you see us headed as a profession, and why should younger lawyers be excited about the profession itself? And secondly, what about the ABA? Where is it headed? What needs to happen in order for it to remain relevant and remain viable for a long time?
So I can actually answer both questions, I think, together. So why should you be excited about the profession is because I don't think there's ever been a time, certainly that I can recall, where lawyers are needed as much as we are in society, where lawyers are respected as much as we are in society, even though we know that law is the profession that people love to hate. Right. We're also the profession that people are looking to help guide us through some tumultuous times. And, you know, putting political divisions and all that aside, it is the lawyers who are at the forefront in shaping society. So it's a really exciting time to be a lawyer. It's a time when we need lawyers. We need people that are passionate about the rule of law and passionate about helping people. And so that if you're following that passion, then you need to be in the ABA, because the ABA gives you an opportunity to do all of that and more. And you can do it whether it's your day job or whether it's a passion that you have, where your day job is one thing, but you're really interested in all kinds of areas, you'll be able to find that within the ABA. So whether your passion is legal education and whether or not we should have the LSAT, because we know that that was a big debate in the House of Delegates, then get involved in the ABA and be a part of that conversation. Yeah. If your passion is civil rights, if your passion is human rights, if your passion is making sure that confidentiality, attorney-client privilege remains a bedrock of the legal profession, you can do that in the ABA. So it's literally a great time to be a lawyer, and an even more important time to be a member of the ABA.
Well, listen, I started off by talking about how honored I was to have this chance to chat with you. I'll end by reiterating that same thing. Again, I think the ABA and the profession itself and our society is very fortunate to have you at the helm of this organization. And I'm honored to call you my friend. And even more honored to have you spend a few minutes with us. So thank you so much.
This has been a real joy, a privilege, and a pleasure. Thank you so much for doing this, for all that you're doing in the ABA. And thanks for this opportunity to have this chat. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.